Hello and welcome to Profiles in Risk. And this is your host, Tony Cañas. Today I have with me Peter Dawson, advisor for the 831B Institute. Peter, how's it going today?
Great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Fantastic. And normally we would take a little time to break the ice, but we just had 15 minutes of technical difficulties. So for the sake of time, we will run right into it.
Sounds great.
So Peter, what is the 831B Institute?
So 831B, first of all, is a section of the tax code, right? Just like a 401k is a section of the tax code, 831B was set up by Congress in 1986 to really provide a solution for small business owners, an insurance solution, I should say, for small business owners, to go outside of traditional insurance lines and to procure insurance that's not readily available. And so 831B Institute is really an organization that is set up to help really approach Congress, Tony, for lack of a better way to put it, approach Congress and have a conversation with them and explain, hey guys, you did a great job in 1986. They went back in 2015, Tony, and they updated the law, did some tweaks and actually made it a better section of the tax code. And it's really designed to go to Congress and say, hey, look, you know, you as Congress, as the legislative branch, set up a great, great vehicle for small business owners. And we need your help with the administrative branch or the executive branch. And really, it's the IRS that administers that law. And we need your help to really get some substance and definition around that section of the tax code. And that's no different than a 401k, Tony. Like a 401k, when it was first passed by Congress, there weren't a lot of structures and rules around it. And over the many, many decades since then, it's a lot more robust and it's well-defined and so forth. And that's really what we're asking Congress for, is give us some help to really, really solidify your vision of what this was supposed to be for small business owners.
Okay. So originally created in 86, first in, or updated in 2015. What is it that's missing? What is it that we still need Congress to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking. So, you know, Congress a lot of times will give an idea, right? You look at most of the laws they pass, a new one, the Affordable Care Act, right? It was an idea, but then there's a lot of rules, regulations, a lot of protocols to basically make sure that the idea actually is what Congress intended it to be, right? And that's what we're really asking for here, Tony, is, okay, Congress, you passed this great law that has a lot of benefits to help us insure against risk that we can't do inside the traditional insurance market. And we need your help to provide some really bright line rules, some parameters, some guidance, really, on how that should look from a day-to-day operational standpoint. And it's been kind of a void, and frankly, the IRS hasn't been willing, or probably willing is the right word, or unable, I don't know, to actually provide any clarity. And I think they're doing that on purpose. I think they don't want to provide clarity. And so when the executive branch doesn't want to provide clarity, Tony, as you know, your only option is to go to the congressional branch and say, hey, you guys passed a cool law. The executive branch doesn't really want to give us any parameters or help us know what that's supposed to look like. So we're coming back to you all and saying, hey, can y'all put some more, you know, put some meat on those bones, give us some more definition, give us some more substance to help us know if we're operating this how you all want it to be operated.
Okay. How did the Institute come to be?
So the Institute really came out of the brainchild, I suppose, came from a gentleman by the name of Van Carlson. And Van has a company called Strategic Risk Alternatives. And for many, many years, he'd helped small business owners set up micro captives or you know, that's what they're called. 831B, you'll see inside it will say microcaps, as it's commonly referred to those, or that's how they're commonly referred to as microcaps. But he's basically an 831B manager, right? He's helped small business owners maneuver through their current regulations, which it's very minimal, but work through the current regulations and protocols, tax returns, all those things that you need to do, notifications to the IRS and so forth. He helped establish and he built a business over the last, you know, Van would have to tell you specifically, Tony, but probably 12 years in really building a business that helps small business owners set these up and make sure they're compliant with the current rules the IRS has out there. And over the last couple of years, as the IRS has continued to not give guidance, he thought, you know, we really need a, you know, an outreach, right? A non-business outreach to Congress to basically make them aware of this, right? And it is fairly complicated, right? I mean, it's not complicated, but it's complex, maybe more accurate, right? There's a lot of moving parts. You have a lot of insurances issues. You have a lot of finance issues. You have, you know, you have tax issues that all kind of converge here. And so there's complexity, right? And really the 831B Institute was designed to hopefully simplify that for everyone who's not overly familiar with it. And frankly, I'm familiar with it only because I am a tax attorney and I've spent a lot of time helping clients, you know, small business owners properly set up and fund their own micro captives.
Okay. From the 2015 update, what is the status of the tax code now?
So in rewind a little bit to 1986. You know, in 86, it was a bipartisan initiative, right? You had Ronald Reagan in office, you know, and so, you know, everyone knows about the Reagan tax overhaul. And during that time, you know, things like the R&D tax credit, which you might be familiar with, research and development tax credit, micro captives, were put into the tax code to really help make businesses more competitive, right? At that time, Congress was very concerned, obviously the executive branch as well with Ronald Reagan, very concerned about making sure that U.S. businesses stayed on the cutting edge of, you know, of the world economy. And they put tools in place to make sure that that happened. Well, 2015, you also saw the R&D tax credit addressed, right, during the Obama administration. And same thing here with the microcaptives. That was addressed to basically put an inflation rider on it, right? So the initial amount that you could put into a captive, a microcaptive, was $1.2 million. 2015, they said, hey, we're going to update the law. We're going to increase that amount, and then we're also going to put this inflation rider or an index, inflation index, so that as inflation increases, business owners can reserve more premiums, because obviously inflation causes everything to go up in cost, right? And so in addition, Congress had closed some loopholes. Not that I want to get into too much nitty-gritty, but some of those I would say were fairly abusive. And so Congress closed those loopholes to ensure that this section of the tax code was actually utilized for its pure intent, which is really to mitigate intangible risk and or risks that are very difficult to insure through normal insurance channels, right? The Nationwides, the World, Geico, et cetera, right? Just again, traditional risks that all of us buy insurance for on a daily basis.
Yeah. What are some ways that us insurance professionals can use the 831B tax code for our clients?
So, first of all, it really is only for business owners.
Okay.
You know, I'm doing on 401ks a lot, but we can talk about 403Bs or rules underneath, you know, for IRAs and so forth. A lot of those obviously are available to everyone. HSAs, all those things are inside the tax code, all available to anyone who has the ability to fund those. As far as a micro captive is concerned, you really do need to be a business owner. And so, you know, for a lot of folks, that's a pretty big hurdle. Additionally, you really have to set up the insurance for its proper purpose, right? You can't just make it a tax haven or a tax shelter. So Tony, the big thing is making sure that it complies with insurance principles, right? So fortuitous risk and you know, things that you just can't foresee, right? You can't insure against business risk per se, right? If someone comes in and competes against you or me and they're better at it, well, sorry, you and I are out of luck, right? But, you know, the micro captive really is designed to say, hey, look, we'll just use a trucking company, okay? You're insuring your trucks. You know, you're insuring your building that you house your inventory in. But what about intangible risks, right? Like brand name protection, cybersecurity. Some insurance carriers are getting more in that space, but what if they're not? What if your carrier doesn't? What about supply chain risk or governmental interruption, like during COVID-19, right? So the insurance is legitimate insurance, right? Just like if you submit a claim to GEICO and they come out and say, oh yeah, you did get hit and here's a check to fix your car. It's no different here, right? You're trying to make business owners whole for risks that are impossible to foresee. No one knew that the world was going to shut down in 2020. And so when that happened, a lot of business owners that had a micro-captive, Tony, could trigger their coverages and get a check to basically keep their businesses going. Mm. You know, the government jumped in and, you know, obviously we have rampant inflation because of it and printed $8 trillion. But this provides a mechanism where essentially a company can build their own PPP fund, right? And can say, hey, yeah, the government just shut down the world and we still have employees and a business to run. So we're going to exercise just like you would with your homeowner's insurance. It's going to trigger a clause. We're going to submit a claim and it's going to pay out, right? And so that's what it's for business owners, right? It's a mechanism to say, hey, I don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. Let's get an insurance policy in place. We're going to reserve premiums and pay premiums to do so. And that's it. I mean, it's really in a nutshell. Obviously, there's from a business perspective, Tony, you know, you can overinsure, you can underinsure. I think those are kind of obvious statements, but sometimes not always. And again, you got to obviously have the requisite premiums or, you know, revenue to justify taking out, you know, premiums and on this non-traditional insurance.
So for those businesses that qualify, does it replace their traditional insurance or is it a supplement for the things that can't be easily insured by their traditional insurance?
So, I mean, they can be used for lots of things. So hypothetically, it could replace traditional insurance, but typically we're looking for coverages that are just non-traditional that you really could not. So yes, much more of a supplement than a, hey, let's replace everything that we're currently doing.
Okay. Any if things go well with what you're doing at the 831B Institute, what do you expect captives will be? What's going to change the next 5 to 10 years?
Yes, that's a really excellent question. You know, if you want to talk about my pipe dream, you know, like I know I'm a tax nerd, right? I get that, Tony. So you look at it and you go, I would like to see this utilized and commonplace like a 401k plan is commonplace. Now, that may sound a little unrealistic currently, but, you know, the goal with Congress isn't, hey, just turn a blind eye if there's abuses, if there are abuses. Like in 2015, I told you they closed some loopholes, which we could go into more detail on a future call perhaps, but that was okay with me. Fine, Congress, close those loopholes. That's okay. You know, one of my favorite tax professors in law school used to say, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, right? And so really the goal with tax planning, asset protection, risk mitigation is not, hey, you know, that's fine. Let's pay our fair share of taxes and no more. But, you know, let's obviously use it for the purposes as intended. But you want to make sure that Congress just gives us some bright line rules. I guess ultimately that's what we're looking for. If there are bad actors, Tony, I'm good with bad actors being pushed out of the market, right? I think that should happen. I don't love regulation, but I don't fear it either when it's properly done, right? And properly done means you got input from the executive branch, input from the legislative branch, and input from practitioners like myself, a tax attorney, CPAs and accountants, insurance professionals, right? And also the stakeholders, which are the business owners, the small business owners primarily, right? I'm not talking about Fortune 1000 companies and that kind of thing. But, you know, small business owners, mom and pop shops that employ, you know, 65, 70 million people, you know, in our workforce, that's who we're trying to really, you know, reach. And again, I would love it if this became, you know, standardized, like, hey, you go to your TPA to help you establish your 401k plan for your, you know, for your trucking company or for your roofing company or for your law firm, you know. 5 years from now, maybe a little optimistic because of how slow government moves, but maybe in 10 years, Tony, we can get there.
Okay. In order to help my client set up a micro captive, do I just need an insurance license, a surplus license, Do I need to work with their CPA? What are the licensing requirements?
So currently there are no licensing requirements. Yeah. In terms of, you know, I guess we'll call it the individual profession. What I would recommend is you go to a captive manager, you know, like SRA, that is familiar with them, because there are, it's not to say there aren't compliance issues, right? Because there are, you know, tax returns, you know, good captive managers will proactively report, you know, hey, this is a unique transaction, and it's unique only because the IRS has made it unique. You know, it's been a tax code for almost 40 years, but they just haven't really put any parameters around it. So basically, you know, with my clients, we actively tell the IRS, hey, we're doing something non-traditional. It isn't the tax code, but we're just alerting you to the fact that we're doing this, right? I mean, we're like basically putting them on notice, like, hey, we are doing this. We're utilizing this section of the tax code. Y'all haven't given us any bright line rules, but we are proactively reporting. So from a baseline standpoint, I if you will, there's not any licensure, like you need your law degree or you need your life and health license or you need to be securities licensed and so forth to set this up. Candidly, in the future, if Congress wanted to do that, I wouldn't be opposed to it. It's just my only request, not that I have a say on this, but from a lobbying standpoint, I would request that Congress involve all the folks I mentioned before, right? Do involve the IRS, do involve your congressmen and senators, do involve accountants and CPAs and attorneys and insurance professionals, you know, do involve small business owners in that discussion. You know, if you look at, again, well-established laws like HSAs, 401ks and so forth, which I talk a lot about, there's a lot of professionals, all those people I just listed, that have had input and, you know, given guidance to that process and what that structurally should look like. And they've tweaked it throughout the years, right? That's all we're really wanting, is to give us some parameters and really help us say, hey, Congress, you wanted this, you love it, you've re-upped, if you will, in 2000, you know, 30 years later, you re-upped and said, yeah, we like this, let's keep doing it. So let's give our small business owners help instead of using it as a cudgel to beat them up.
Okay. Okay. So for any listeners who want to get involved in the 831B Institute, how do they get involved?
Yeah. So, you know, we do have a website that we can throw up at the end, and you know, you can go check it out. I'll be frank, we're in our infancy. So from a gearing up and getting moving and so forth, you know, it's just been the last several months that we really kind of got our feet under us. Again, a lot of folks that are involved with 831B Institute have been doing it for many years. Like I mentioned Ben Carlson earlier, I've known of microcaptives for 15 years, but started using them in the last 7 years with my clientele. But it's really just, I think more than anything, it's educating yourself first and foremost before doing anything else, right? There's a lot of information out there, but if you go to the 831B Institute, you can get, you know, obviously our viewpoint, but I think it's more fact-based than, you know, subjectively biased. You know, I think that's a good place to start, right? Learn about the section of the tax code, learn why it was formulated in the first place, learn what it does do, learn what it doesn't do, learn what it's supposed to, learn what the core purposes are intended to be, and then learn also what potential abuses look like, right? Because again, you know, the IRS, Congress, they don't like it when people use something and abuse it, right? So I think that's a good baseline always in life. Like, look, go through, educate yourself. Once you've done that, then there will be, you know, on the 831B website, you could actually, you know, email, text, call. I know people don't call much anymore, but send a letter even and say, hey, you know what? Love to get involved. What does that look like? Right now, you know, we're going to newspapers, talking to folks like yourself for podcasts, you know, sending letters into specific committees and Congress people, men and women, just saying, hey, you all may be aware of this section of the tax code. I know there's lots of other things going on, like budget fights and so forth, Tony, and wars and rivers of war over the world and so forth. I get there's a lot of stuff going on. And also we still have to take care of our families and our small businesses at home, or, you know, we'll be in a bad position globally as well. But I think a lot of that is after you've educated yourself, long-winded answer, going back and saying, okay, 831B Institute, let's contact you all. And what can I do to help? Whether it's, like I said, sending a letter to your senator representative in your state, you know, if you go over to the Hill, helping us, you know, drop in and meet with those folks, to doing op-eds, or just starting to talk to 831B about, you know, if they're a professional, maybe it's their small businesses, their small business clients. So they say, hey, we'd like to learn more about this. How does this work? How would they utilize one if they wanted to utilize one, you know, in 2023 or 2024?
All right. Thank you very much for your time. For the listeners to learn more, 831binstitute.org. And thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to see you, hopefully, get this. And by you, I mean the Institute, get this to yes, where it needs to be, so it's not a giant mess anymore.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate your time as well. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Where there.